Well, this is December 28th, 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 17:55 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again for our study of the Crucible Cubed, or C-Cubed article. Crucible of Credible Creed, C times 3, or C3, or C-Cubed, as it's called, and Chapter 3 we're in at the moment, Paragraph 5. Nebpetire was the praenomen of Pharaoh Amos. A praenomen is a throne name which was given at coronation. Before Amos became Pharaoh, Egypt was ruled by the kings Kamuti and Kamos, Kamuti being the Hyksos ruler who was ruling in the Nile Delta region in the north, the southern region comprising more arid lands being ruled by Kamos. Kamos, praenomen Wajkepere, is said to have been a brother of Amos and reigned 3 to 5 years. The Rhind mathematical papyrus connects Amos with the pharaoh Kamuti, mentioning the fall of Heliopolis or On in the 11th year of Kamuti to a prince of the south. Until Amos united the country under his own rule, it was divided into north and south, the north being called Lower Egypt because it is lower physically, with the Nile River still flowing from south to north to the Big Green today. Pharaoh Ramesses III, ruling 1223 to 1191 BCE, in our chronology, writes, those dates are from the genealogy, our chronology, he writes to Amun the following, I built you ships, freight ships, arched ships with rigging, plying the Big Green, the sea. I manned them with archers, captains, and innumerable sailors to bring the goods of the land of Tyre and the foreign countries at the end of the world to your storage rooms at Thebes, the victorious. Thebes is a city which is in the south at about latitude 25 degrees compared to the north, which is about latitude 29 or so. I'm not sure what the latitude of Heliopolis is, but it's somewhere around that, and not too different from Memphis, which is about 29 degrees latitude, between 29 and 30, whereas Thebes is between 25 and 26 degrees latitude. What is it? How many miles per latitude? 5 miles? Years? I'm trying to think. It's not 5 miles per degree latitude. But it's a fixed number, I think. Possibly, anyway. But it's... We can find out, but... That would be good to know, wouldn't it? How many miles per degree latitude? Let me look it up. I can type straight. 69 miles per degree of latitude. Okay. So 4 degrees is about 280 miles north of Thebes, is where Heliopolis is, or Memphis anyway. Roughly. That's a rough idea of how much it is in distance. 69 miles per degree latitude. See, I don't even think I knew that. I probably did look it up at one time, but I'd forgotten it. Now Ecclesiastes 7, little children, and verse 13 is our scripture for today. See the work of the true God, for who is able to make straight what he has made crooked? See the work of the true God. I want to brighten this up just a bit here. It's a little better, I think. See the work of the true God, for who is able to make straight what he has made crooked? That's our scripture for today, little children, Ecclesiastes 7 and 13. It's like a proverb. And today's reading in 1 Kings is 1 Kings excuse me. 1 Kings chapter 3, and Solomon proceeded to form a marriage alliance. And Solomon proceeded to form a marriage alliance. Why is that so hard to say? I wanted to say alliance or something. Alliance. A marriage alliance with Pharaoh. Solomon proceeded to form a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and to take Pharaoh's daughter and bring her to the city of David until he finished building his own house and the house of Jehovah and Jerusalem's wall all around. Only the people were sacrificing on the high places, for a house had not been built to the name of Jehovah down to those days. And Solomon continued to love Jehovah by walking in the statutes of David his father. Only it was on the high places that he was regularly sacrificing and making offerings smoke. Accordingly, the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. That was the great high place. Gibeon. 1,000 burnt sacrifices Solomon proceeded to offer upon that altar. In Gibeon, Jehovah appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God proceeded to say, "Request what I should give you." At this, Solomon said, "You yourself have exercised great loving kindness toward your servant David, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you, and you continued keeping toward him this great loving kindness, so that you gave him a son to sit upon his throne as at this day. And now, Jehovah my God, you yourself have made your servant king in the place of David my father, and I am but a little boy. I am but a little boy," he said. Now, he was, we think, older than that, older than a little boy. But this is what he said: "I do not know how to go out and how to come in. Do not know how to go out and how to come in. And your servant is in the middle of your people whom you have chosen, a multitudinous people that cannot be numbered or counted for multitude. And you must give to your servant an obedient heart to judge your people, to discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this difficult people of yours?" And the thing was pleasing in the eyes of Jehovah because Solomon had requested this thing. And God went on to say to him, "For the reason that you have requested this thing and have not requested for yourself many days, nor requested for yourself riches, nor requested the soul of your enemies, and you have requested for yourself understanding to hear judicial cases, look, I shall certainly do according to your words. Look, I shall certainly give you a wise and understanding heart, so that one like you there has not happened to be before you, and after you there will not rise up one like you. And also, what you have not requested, I will give you, both riches and glory, so that there will not have happened to be any among the kings like you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways by keeping my regulations and my commandments, just as David your father walked, I will also lengthen your days." When Solomon awoke, why, here it had been a dream. Then he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah and offered up burnt sacrifices and rendered up communion offerings and spread a feast for all his servants. At that time, two women, prostitutes, got to come into the king and stand before him. Then the one woman said, "Excuse me, my lord, I and this woman are dwelling in one house, so that I gave birth close by her in the house. And it came about on the third day after I gave birth, this woman also proceeded to give birth. And we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, no one but the two of us in the house. Later the son of this woman died at night because she lay upon him. So she got up in the middle of the night and took my son from beside me while your slave girl herself was asleep and laid him in her own bosom. And her dead son she laid in my bosom. When I got up in the morning to nurse my son, why, there he was dead. So I examined him closely in the morning, and look, he did not prove to be my son that I had borne. But the other woman said, 'No, but my son is the living one, and your son is the dead one.' All the while this woman was saying, 'No, But your son is the dead one, and my son is the living one. And they kept on speaking before the king. Finally, the king said, this one is saying, this is my son, the living one, and your son is the dead one. And that one is saying, no, but your son is the dead one, and my son is the living one. And the king went on to say, you men, get me a sword. So they brought the sword before the king, and the king proceeded to say, you men, sever the living child in two, and give the one half to the one woman and the other half to the other. At once the woman whose son was the living one said to the king, for her inward emotions were excited toward her son, so she said, excuse me, my lord, you men, give her the living child. Do not by any means put him to death. All the while this other woman was saying, neither mine nor yours will he become. You men, do the severing. At that the king answered and said, you men, give her the living child, and you must by no means put him to death. She is his mother. And all Israel got to hear of the judicial decision that the king had handed down, and they became fearful because of the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was within him. I was going to say was with him, and that would be accurate too, to execute judicial decision. The wisdom of God was within him to execute judicial decision. Why did I get that wrong? The wisdom of God was with him, I wanted to say, but the Spirit of God was with him. It is usually the Spirit that we say is with you, and the wisdom, in this case, apparently it's more usual in the Hebrew language to say it's within you. Wisdom within you, not with you. But Spirit is with you. It's something that is with you. The Spirit is not said to be within you. That's interesting, isn't it? Because it shows why we don't have a Spirit dwelling in us. Well, although that expression is used also, though. That's right. I'm sure I've seen that somewhere, the spirit dwelling in someone. If we have time, we'll talk about it later. What are we going to talk about now? We've got Ezekiel chapter 5. And as for you, O son of man, take for yourself a sharp sword. As a barber's razor, you will take it for yourself, and you must make it pass along upon your head and upon your beard, and you must take for yourself weighing scales and divide the hair in portions. A third you will burn in the very fire, in the midst of the city, as soon as the days of the siege have come to the full. And you must take another third. You will strike it with the sword all around her. And the last third you will scatter to the wind, and I shall draw out a sword itself after them. And you must take therefrom a few in number and wrap them up in your skirts, and others of them you will take, and you must pitch them into the midst of the fire and incinerate them in the fire. From one, a fire will go forth to all the house of Israel. This is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. This is Jerusalem. In the midst of the nations I have set her, with lands all around her. And she proceeded to behave rebelliously against my judicial decisions in wickedness more than the nations, and against my statutes more than the lands that are all around her. For my judicial decisions they rejected, and as for my statutes, they did not walk in them. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. For the reason that you people were more turbulent than the nations that are all around you, in my statutes you did not walk, and my judicial decisions you did not perform, but according to the judicial decisions of the nations that are all around you, you performed, did you not? Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Here I am against you, O city, even I, and I will execute in the midst of you judicial decisions in the eyes of the nations. And I will do in you that which I have not done, and the like of which I shall not do any more, by reason of all your detestable things. Therefore fathers themselves will eat sons in the midst of you, and sons themselves will eat their fathers, and I will execute in you acts of judgment and scatter all the remainder of you to every wind. Therefore, as I am alive, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. Surely, for the reason that it was my sanctuary that you defiled with all your disgusting things, and with all your detestable things, I myself also am the one that will diminish you, and my eye will not feel sorry, and I myself also will not show compassion. A third of you, by the pestilence they will die, and by famine they will come to their end, and even in the midst of you. And another third, by the sword they will fall all around you. And the last third I shall scatter even to every wind, and the sword is what I shall draw out after them. And my anger will certainly come to its finish, and I will appease my rage on them and comfort myself, and they will have to know that I myself, Jehovah, have spoken in my insistence on exclusive devotion when I bring my rage to its finish upon them. So, a third by pestilence, a third by sword, and a third scattered to every wind. And I shall make you a devastated place and a reproach among the nations that are all around you before the eyes of every passerby. And you must come, you must become a reproach and an object of reviling words, a warning example and a horror to the nations that are all around you, when I do in you acts of judgment in anger and in rage and in raging reproofs, I myself, Jehovah, have spoken. When I send the injurious arrows of the famine upon them, which must prove to be for ruination, which arrows I shall send to bring you people to ruin, even famine I shall increase upon you people, and I will break your rods around which ring-shaped loaves are suspended. The ring-shaped loaves are things that the Jews ate, and we would logically assume they were bagels. That's what we still have today from the Jewish cuisine, bagels. And I will send upon you people famine and injurious wild beasts, and they must bereave you of children, and pestilence and blood themselves will pass along through you, and a sword I shall bring in upon you. I was going to say bring upon you. And a sword I shall bring in upon you. I myself, Jehovah, have spoken. Ezekiel chapter 5 is concluded. So we've done 1 Kings chapter 3 and Ezekiel chapter 5. And the letter of 1 John chapter 5, this is a marvelous chapter, as are all the works of John. Everyone believing that Jesus is the Christ has been born from God. And everyone who loves the one that caused to be born loves him who has been born from that one. By this we gain the knowledge that we are loving the children of God, when we are loving God and doing his commandments. For this is what the love of God means, that we observe his commandments. And yet his commandments are not burdensome, because everything that has been born from God conquers the world. And this is the conquest that has conquered the world, our faith. Who is the one that conquers the world but he who has faith that Jesus is the Son of God? This is he that came by means of water and blood, Jesus Christ, not with the water only, but with the water and with the blood. And the Spirit is that which is bearing witness, because the Spirit is the truth, for there are three witness bearers, the Spirit and the water and the blood. And the three are in agreement. And this is what some people translate as the three are one, right? And there's another verse that they have added in there that says that the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit and these three are one. Also, by adding that, they end up with the Trinity doctrine, but it's not in the original manuscript from which this was translated. If we receive the witness men give, verse 9, the witness God gives is greater, because this is the witness God gives, the fact that he has borne witness concerning his Son. The person putting his faith in the Son of God has the witness given in his own case. The person not having faith in God has made him a liar, because he has not put his faith in the witness given, which God as witness has given concerning his Son. And this is the witness given, that God gave us everlasting life, and this life is in his Son. He that has the Son has this life, and he that does not have the Son of God does not have this life. I write you these things that you may know that you have life everlasting, you who put your faith in the name of the Son of God. And this is the confidence that we have toward him, that no matter what it is that we ask according to his will, he hears us. Further, if we know he hears us respecting whatever we are asking, we know we are to have the things asked, since we have asked them of him. If anyone catches sight of his brother sinning a sin that does not incur death, he will ask and he will give life to him, yes, to those not sinning so as to incur death. There is a sin that does incur death. It is concerning that sin that I do not tell him to make request. All unrighteousness is sin, and yet there is a sin that does not incur death. We know that every person that has been born from God. Why do I want to say we know that every person has been born from God? That's obviously not true. We know that every person that has been born from God does not practice sin, but the one born from God watches him. That's right. Who's the one born from God? Jesus, evidently, the one born from God. Every person that has been born from God does not practice sin, but the one born from God watches him, and the wicked one does not fasten his hold on him. The wicked one being the devil. We know we originate with God. Of course, and all the representatives of the devil are also the part of that. They're also considered to be the wicked one. We know we originate with God, but the whole world is lying in the power of the wicked one. But we know that the Son of God has come and he's given us intellectual capacity that we may gain the knowledge of the true one. Jesus gives us intellectual capacity, and we are in union with the true one, Jehovah, by means of his Son, Jesus Christ. By means of his Son, Jesus Christ, we are in union with Jehovah. This is the true God and life everlasting. Little children, guard yourselves from idols. What if this had said, we know we originate with God, but 77.876% of the world is lying in the power of the wicked one? That's not what it says, is it? It says the whole world, 100% of the world is lying in the power of the wicked one. So do you not think that that would include all earthly organizations, all of them, no matter what they call themselves, no matter if they use God's name in the name of their organization, or no matter what it is, if it's an organization in the world, anywhere on the surface of the earth, the whole world is lying in the power of the wicked one. So the only way to stay out of it, away from the wicked one, is to be not a part of these organizations. That's what that is saying. The whole world is lying in the power of the wicked one. There's no organization on the face of the earth, although there are many who claim to be God's organization on the face of the earth. Right? There are many, actually. All religious organizations, and even these extremist organizations, who are also religious, but even terrorist organizations who are religious, they all claim to be God's organization, surely. They claim to have God's authority and blessing, and that they are acting from God's own wishes, upon God's wishes they are acting, is what they claim, and that they originate with God and so on. All of them claim that, so that there are no organizations on earth. You can't say that, oh, well, we are the organization, we're the true one. That's going to fail, because organizations rely on people, and these people have relationships amongst themselves, between each other, between each other, relationships between each other and amongst themselves in different ways. There are many relationships in these organizations that are human relationships, which are very corruptible because people are imperfect. And, you know, it's a very impossible idea to say that there's an organization that is not corrupt or that is not influenced by the devil. They're all influenced by the devil. And a classic thing, one of the things that really irks me, since we've got some extra time, we're finished our readings, since we have some more time, one of the things that really irks me is this idea of the healthcare system being the place to turn. When you think about what a hospital is, you realize how absurd this idea is. A hospital is a place where people are shown hospitality, right? It was a place for people who had nowhere to go. That's what a hospital was for. It's for people who have nowhere to go. But ultimately, responsibility for your own health, that's not the responsibility of the hospital. That's each person's responsibility. Each of us and each of you, each of us has a responsibility to ourselves to look after our own health. Each of us is responsible for our own health. And to say that anyone else could be made responsible, no matter which or what doctor is consulted, doesn't matter whether it's a conventional doctor like an allopathic or an alternative doctor, or say maybe an holistic practitioner or somebody who uses natural means to cure diseases like cancer. No matter what practitioner is consulted, doesn't matter, you're not going to get the proper answer from that person in all likelihood, because only you know what's wrong with you. Only you, in consultation with God himself, can find out what you need to do in order to cure yourself. And you can cure yourself. The doctor I mentioned yesterday who cured her cancer, her name is Lorraine Day. She was a surgeon. She refused chemotherapy because she knew that chemotherapy drugs cause cancer, and she refused it just on conscientious grounds. She could not consent to it, so she ended up being by herself with no one assisting her. And as far as what she says, there was no one with her. And she was reading the Bible and learned about how the plants were given to Adam and Eve, right? All the vegetation was given to them. At that time, they had not been given animals as food. So she decided, she somehow got the message from God that she was going to make fresh vegetable juices from vegetables that she then juiced. And this vegetable juice, she had a large tumor in her chest, like a large tumor. Large. It was growing rapidly and she was dying, and she took these vegetable juices and she healed her cancer. The tumor shrunk and disappeared. She was left with a hole in her chest where the cancer had been. But she lived, I haven't checked up on her recently, but she was living last time I looked. And she had been living for, I believe, something like 10 years or more since the cancer, cancer-free at that point. But she changed her whole, her whole eating regimen and her whole, diet. What's another word for that? Her choice of food, changed completely after the cancer, and she no longer ate the same things. There's so many things that are not good to eat, that we still eat, and many of us are still eating the bad things. And there are good things, and there are things that are less good, basically, with regard to food. And but we're the ones responsible. It's not the other organizations or the other physicians. They're not the ones responsible for our health. It's our responsibility. And what we learned today, it's fascinating, isn't it? What we learned today from Solomon's experience when he was talked to by God, you know, there. God said, Jehovah said, look, I shall certainly give you a wise and understanding heart. And in the at the end of this part, he said, look, if you will walk in my ways, right, I will also lengthen your days. So this is an interesting point, because it says keeping his regulations and commandments, but walk in his ways by keeping his regulations and commandments, as David had done too. Solomon's father had walked in Jehovah's regulations, but it implies that there's a right way and a wrong way to do things there. And then if you do it right, God says, I will lengthen your days. So doesn't that imply that what we eat will determine how long we live? I definitely think so, based on the evidence I've seen. And vitamin C has been used to cure cancer by, in some cases, eating more than 100 grams per day of vitamin C, of ascorbate, which is a very difficult thing to do. To eat that much vitamin C, I would think it would be difficult. Anyway, I've never tried to eat that much. I know vitamin C has cured every flu that I've ever had and every cold long before they got full strength or full-blown, you know, illness. I've been able to wipe out every cold and flu and strep throat and everything that I've had ever since I learned about vitamin C, because I took the vitamin C fast enough. I don't like taking it in large quantities, you know, all of us, every 20 minutes, 2 grams, until I have a bowel movement or whatever. I don't like having to take it, or until I know that my illness is cured. I don't like taking it because it's, you know, it's a strong thing. Vitamin C is a strong food or a strong vitamin. But I take it because I know it's better than being sick. And it actually doesn't, it's not very toxic. The only side effect of vitamin C is diarrhea. That's the only side effect. And when you get diarrhea, you've got to stop taking it, because it will cause, you know, quite a bit of diarrhea if you don't stop. You'll be in trouble because you won't be able to get off the toilet. But that's the end of our video and study for today, little children, little ones. And it's wonderful that you're able to be with us. I love seeing you. I hope you're doing okay. And this is December 28th, 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 18:28 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. It's a pleasure to be with you once again. I love you very much. And I want you to know that we're going to keep doing this as much as we can every single day, because the scriptures have the power to give us truly everlasting life. The Word of God is alive, Hebrews 4 and 12. And in my behalf, this is Gully, my wind-up, and it's a chronograph too. She's a chronograph, a wind-up watch. And that's Gully. And this is Cassie, my digital electronic watch, on my behalf, saying bye for now.